much for sticking it out for the very last day. I really appreciate it. I'm very excited to share with you some results from a study that I've been working on over the past year with a couple of my co-authors, including one of whom, Dr. Sarah Toomey, is here today. So specifically, I'm going to be focusing on understanding predictors of the timing of the care transfer from pediatric to adult-focused primary care. I do not have any disclosures or financial relationships to conflicts of interest or financial relationships to disclose, but I do, of course, want to acknowledge the generous funding support that I received for this project. So adolescents and young adults comprise a very large portion of the U.S. population, approximately 20%, and this is a really interesting population to focus on for several reasons. I think just a few of them include the fact that this is a really unique developmental period. There are a lot of things that are going on, not just the healthcare transition, but transitioning from potentially living with your parents to school or new employment opportunities. So a lot of change in independence and autonomy that are co-occurring. And additionally, this group is really at risk for some unique vulnerabilities. So we see an increased risk-taking behaviors during this period of time, as well as very high rates of uninsurance. This group has the highest rates of uninsurance in the United States of any age range, and it peaked, and it's coming down recently because of some of the health reforms that have been rolled out in past years, but it definitely peaked close to about 50%. So this group really has a lot of increased risk for potential adverse health outcomes and also is at increased risk for poor access to care at the same time. So certainly a group that a lot of people are interested in focusing on and making sure we can ensure adequate access for them. And to that end, there has been a consensus statement that was released in 2011 that addressed this issue of care transitions for adolescent and young adult populations. And they made a couple specific recommendations, but interestingly, they said this care transition process really doesn't have kind of an overarching, these are the checkpoints that everyone needs to go through, and it should happen sometime between 18 and 21 years. But at the end of the day, they kind of leave it up to the specific providers to say, you know, it's a situation-specific, person-specific thing. And so I think this raises a lot of questions of, well, how can we go about improving care and kind of trying to measure and target quality improvements related to this transition process if we don't really have an understanding of what's going on and what the process looks like on a population level. So related to that, I think increasing the recognition of these unique healthcare needs raises, again, more questions about how do we measure this transition process and how do those measurements inform our understanding of targeted efforts to improve the quality of those transitions. So specifically for this project, our objective was really to start at the beginning and determine the factors that are related to the age and timing of the transfer to adult-focused primary care. So when are these transitions happening for the majority of youth? Again, the consensus statement mentioned 18 to 21 as the age range when this should be happening, but we have actually no existing data to suggest that that's the age that people are actually engaging in this transition process. And we also wanted to specifically look at how long in between the last pediatric and the first adult-focused PCP visit. So what was kind of the duration of this transfer process? And did this transfer process really result in an extended period of time without access to regular care? So in order to address these questions, we used data from the Harvard Pilgrim Healthcare. It's a health insurance company that's primarily focused in New England, but they do have beneficiaries in all 50 states, but primarily in New England, and they have a really lovely claims data set that they, we were using to create this retrospective longitudinal cohort. And some important inclusion criteria for this sample. We were looking at youth who were enrolled between the ages of 16 through at least age 18, and they were enrolled between January 2000 and December 2012. And we wanted to observe at least one pediatric primary care visit during that 16 to 18 time range. So these were people who were actively interfacing with the healthcare system and specifically with the pediatrician and thus would in fact have to transfer to an adult provider at some point. So, for example, we're saying everyone would really transition, right? Well, it's certainly possible that a 16-year-old was seeing a family practice PCP and so wouldn't necessarily need to transition to an adult provider at that time. So we did exclude those youth who are already interfacing with adult providers prior to age 18. And because we were dealing with this longitudinal cohort, we were allowed to follow people through age 26 or through their first disenrollment from the health plan. In order to identify these PCP office visits, we were, again, working with claims data, so we relied on CPT codes and encounter types. And we're also looking specifically at what the provider is designated as their specialty. So in order to identify pediatric PCPs, we're looking at pediatric MDs, adolescent medicine docs, as well as pediatric nurse practitioners. And then we have a separate set of criteria to identify adult PCPs. So a couple of the independent variables that we were interested in looking at as far as predictors of this transfer process included sex, chronic condition status, which was based on an algorithm that was developed at Seattle Children's Hospital, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in just a second, as well as neighborhood poverty. So this is certainly a proxy for individual socioeconomic status, but an important one considering we're working with claims data and would have limited data on that otherwise. And we're also interested in looking at provider networks, so whether or not the health insurance plan that these youth were enrolled in had a very generous provider network, so for example, like a PPO or a POS, where they really had a wide variety of providers that they could choose from, or a more narrow provider network, such as a tiered network plan or an HMO, where they might be slightly more restricted in their selection of a PCP provider. And there's two ways that we assess this provider network latent construct. So first, we just looked at a time-varying covariate. Did they have, at that any given point in time, did they have a generous PPO or POS network or a more narrow HMO or tiered network? And then we also wanted to understand whether or not a change in provider network could actually precipitate the transition process. So we included a second variable that specifically looked at if there was a change in provider network that preceded the event or the censoring. And we also wanted to adjust for a few additional covariates, including state of residence, the year that the subject turned 16, so index year for period cohort effects, and the age of the last pediatric PCP visit. So just to revisit the chronic condition status variable, as it's what I mentioned before, so we're using only ICD-9 diagnosis codes to identify chronic condition status. And again, this is based on a validated algorithm that was recently published by a group out of Seattle called the Pediatric Medical Complexity Algorithm. And this divides youth into three different categories, the first of which is a complex chronic condition. And this is specifically a significant chronic condition in two or more body systems. So for example, having both diabetes and depression would count. Or it could be a single progressive condition with decreased life expectancy, technological dependence, or malignancy. So cystic fibrosis is one such example. There's also a second kind of categorization of chronic conditions that's a non-complex chronic condition, so a lifelong condition but not necessarily complex or episodic. So asthma alone would count as this non-complex chronic. And then the third group is this no conditions, which also could include acute or otherwise healthy youth. So for the analytic approach, because we were dealing with longitudinal data, we were using Cox regression analysis to look at the two separate models, first of which was time from age 16 to the first adult-focused PCP. So this was our indicator of the age at which transition was occurring. And the second was looking at time from the last pediatric PCP visit to the first adult PCP visit, and this was our indicator of what that transition gap looked like. So we had just over 60,000 individuals in our cohort, so a pretty sizable group, and mean follow-up time was about 4.8 years, starting from age 16. So for a large majority of these youth, we were able to follow them through at least age 21 and certainly beyond for a lot of cases. Pretty even distribution between male and female, and actually a pretty sizable amount of youth that had either a complex or a non-complex chronic condition at just over 30%. And interestingly, although we had a very large cohort, there was actually not a large proportion of them who we could observe a care transfer for. So only 36.9% actually had an observable care transfer at some point during the follow-up time, which I think might strike some people as being a little bit lower than you would expect. And then among those who did transfer their primary care provider from a pediatric to an adult provider, the mean age at transfer was 19.8 years, and about three-quarters of these youth did complete a transfer by age 21, but there certainly was a distribution in the age of transfer such that some youth were delaying through their mid-20s to transition to an adult provider. So I'm very much a visual person, and I like to present my multivariable results with some visual aids, and so I'm just going to take a second to orient you to how I'm going to show the results. So in this slide, and this is going to serve as a model for what we're going to see for the next several slides, I'm going to show a modified box plot. So I ran Cox regression analyses, output adjusted survivorship functions, and from those adjusted survivorship functions was able to determine what is the adjusted median age at transfer, the adjusted 25th and 75th percentiles. So in this box plot, the one on the top is always going to represent that first Cox regression, so time from age 16 to the first adult focused or age of transfer. And overall, that was about 28. The median age of transfer is 21.8 years. And the edges of the boxes represent the predicted 25th and 75th percentile. And again, that center line is going to show you the predicted median. And then the second set of box plots that will appear beneath refer to that second Cox regression model, where we're looking at the time from the last pediatric to the first adult focus. So that's going to represent the time of the transfer gap. So comparing gender, we noticed that females transferred at younger ages than males. And so the difference was not insubstantial, certainly statistically significant, but practically speaking, maybe not quite as large as you might expect, considering some of the existing literature that describes how females generally tend to interface with the healthcare system more frequently than males. But we did see that they transferred at younger ages than their male counterparts. And also, females did have shorter gaps between their pediatric and adult-focused visits than their male counterparts. Looking at chronic conditions, we saw that youth with chronic conditions also transferred at younger ages compared to youth without any chronic conditions, and there was small differences between complex and non-complex chronic conditions, although they were basically negligible. And also, youth with chronic conditions had shorter transfer gaps, so the time between the last pediatric and first adult visit was shorter than their counterparts with no chronic conditions. Looking at neighborhood poverty, youth that were living in low-income areas transferred at older ages than youth who were living in higher-income areas. And also, transfer gaps were much longer for youth with living in low-income areas than youth living in higher-income areas. So we did not find a significant difference in age of transfer based on the provider network. And there was a very small difference in transfer gaps, such that those who were in an HMO or tiered network plan had a slightly shorter transfer gap. However, when we looked at the change in provider network immediately precipitating the event, we did see some interesting differences, specifically that the youngest age of transfer was found among youth who switched from a more generous or broader provider network to a more narrow provider network. And I think some people look a little bit perplexed at this point and are thinking why, so I'm going to take a second to editorialize for a minute. Some of the hypothesized mechanisms by which this might occur is if you imagine a young adult who is trying to figure out what adult PCP to see, and if you're in an HMO, perhaps the HMO designates a PCP for you and does all of the heavy lifting on your behalf, and that might facilitate you actually making a transition, whereas if you're in a PPO or a POS and the decision is left completely up to you and you have a wide range of providers to choose from, that might be slightly intimidating for some adolescents and young adults and could in fact delay the transfer for them because of that increased choice, which I think some behavioral economists would be angry at me for saying, but increased choice might not always be a better thing in some cases, particularly for adolescents who might feel overwhelmed by said choice. And then looking at the transfer gap, the shortest transfer gap was among youth who did switch from a more generous to a narrow provider network, and I think some of the same reasons that I just discussed might be coming into play for looking at transfer gap as well. And I also want to point out one of the important methodological considerations when we were devising how we can operationalize what actually is this transfer. We started by looking at just any office visit, so transferring from a pediatric provider that they see in any office setting to an adult provider that they see in an office setting, to then taking a subset of those office visits and saying, was that visit specifically a preventive visit? And again, that was based on using CPT codes. And when we look at preventive visits as our to categorize our outcome, we actually see that the transfer gap and the age of transfer extends a little bit later. As you might imagine, typically people go longer in between specifically visits for preventive care versus just general office visits. So all of the results were consistent when you look at the predictors. However, the actual length of the gap and the age of transfer was longer using preventive visits. So a couple important limitations I definitely want to discuss. We are only using data from a single commercial health insurance plan, so we are limited in our generalizability, specifically our ability to generalize to publicly insured or uninsured youth, and that's certainly a very vulnerable population. So things might look slightly different, as well as youth who aren't insured by this plan that's primarily focused in the New England area. I think there's also an important potential for dual enrollment for this group. So you might imagine if youth are going away to college, they might have a student health plan that they have access to. And if the claims aren't coming through their plan that they're potentially dependent covered as a dependent on, we might not be able to pick up those utilization visits. And additionally, these youth might still be enrolled as a dependent through their parents' plan, but might also have a simultaneous coverage as a subscriber, possibly from employment. So in those cases of dually enrolled adolescents and young adults, we might be missing some of their utilization. And I think also something I touched on briefly earlier, it's really challenging to identify when you're looking at how you use claims data to kind of pick up some of the more nuanced about what people think is, you know, their physician, their usual source of care. And so claims data, we have these nice objective measures, but at the same time, we might have categorized someone as experiencing a transfer, but they might not actually see that adult-focused provider that we observe them visiting as someone that they would usually go to or see as their usual source of care. And also, we did not measure transfer of specialty care in this study. We just focused on primary care. Just to reiterate some of the important findings, females and youth with chronic conditions did transfer at younger ages and have shorter gaps, whereas youth living in neighborhoods with high rates of poverty transferred at older ages and had longer gaps. And transfer for preventive visits is longer than for office visits. So just wrap up with a couple important implications. Nearly half the youth in our sample might be transferring care outside of that recommended time frame from the AAP consensus of 18 to 21. So I think it raises some important questions about the potential to revisit guidelines for transition. Is 18 to 21 the appropriate age, or do youth need a little bit more time before they're ready to transition to an adult provider? And we also observed some potentially extended gaps in care. Specifically, we saw about a median of 3.5 years in between preventive visits, which might be too long, again, recognizing that this is a period of increased risk-taking behaviors, so ensuring regular access to a PCP might be particularly important for this group. Thanks very much. So I think that's a really excellent point. So we did look at the preventive visits by gender and saw consistent results as to what I presented before, but I think part of that is because we didn't include OBGYN as an adult PCP provider, although I think there certainly is a large group of adolescent and young adult women who do see their OBGYN physician as their PCP, and so we might be missing those women in particular. So we did consider adding that in, but didn't for this specific analysis, so that's a great suggestion. Right, yeah, density, exactly. I think part of the issue relates to the fact that this is primarily a cohort in New England where there happens to be a particularly high density of providers, but I certainly think that's still going to be important to look at, but more important if we get a little bit additional geographic variability into an additional sample. That's a really fantastic point. Absolutely, yeah. Thank you.